Dr. L. Andreasen, members of the Board of Trustees, faculty, family, friends, relatives, and of course, to this distinguished class of 2006. You need to applaud yourselves. Now, parents, you don't need to relax too much because they are going to need additional financial assistance, some of them. They're not only broke, they're in debt. I recall 51 years ago sitting where you now sit, about to be awarded the PhD degree. And when the provost came to put the hood over my shoulders, my son, who was about 3 years old at the time, blurted out among 30,000 people seated in the Ohio Stadium, "Daddy's Superman." Your family and your friends, your relatives, expect you to be superwomen and supermen. The real question is, how are we going to make use of the education which you now have? And that, knowing the time, it is high time to awake out of sleep. For now is your salvation nearer than when we believed. And that knowing the time. Yes, you know the time. What do you know? You know about Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Daniel 8, and Daniel 9. You know about wars and rumors of war. You know about earthquakes in divers places. You know that we're in the toenails of the image. You know the 2300 days. You know that we live in perilous times. You know that having spent your time at a Defender of the Faith institution, you ought to be ready for the time in which you now live. It is interesting to note that word now. My mother used to say when I was outside, "Junior, come here." And it was a bit slow. She said, "Junior, come here now." I knew then there was an urgency in now. I knew there was some doom hanging on that word now. And so here we are today, knowing that you have a leg up on that verse. That appeal, that challenge was not given to heathen. That challenge was given to the Christian church. And the issue remains that time that we spend on this earth can be measured in a phenomenon of the present. Time past is a present reflection. Time present is a present experience. Time future is a present expectation. And I know you're looking forward to where you go from here. In the African American community, we often exchange friendly greetings by saying, "What's happening?" The response is, nothing happens until you make it happen. You know that. That's why you're sitting here. You have to be thinkers to make things happen. You have to be believers to make things happen. And you have to be a doer to make things happen. And so, you need to be asking, What should I be thinking about? What's the state of the world? Lord, help us when we read the newspapers, listen to the radio, look at television. What's going on in the conflict now in the Middle East, with Iran, with North Korea, with Rwanda, with the Sudan? You name it, the world is in chaos. And we need to have a clear thought about what's happening in terms of that image. We knew that there would not be another world kingdom, but I hasten to remind you, there is one nation that is the political power of the world, the economic power of the world, the militaristic power of the world. God has to come soon, because we are seeing things happen right in the lap of where we live and where we are. Nothing happens until you make it happen. You know what you need to be thinking about in all these situations? You need to be thinking really about what your role is. Where do you fit? Well, let me remind you that you were born qualified. You just came by here to certify the fact. The servant of the Lord says that you will have the opportunity to sit in legislative halls, in judicial assemblies, and in royal courts. And you are one up on students who graduate from The Ohio State University. You have a legacy. You have an understanding that the purpose of your education is to get you into glowing service activities and for the higher joy of wider service in the world to come. You also need to know, as a thinker, you have a responsibility to be an individual. That's what education is all about. As S.H. Hutchins once said, the purpose of education is to make people think straight, if possible, but to think nevertheless. So don't dare let other persons or even institutions tell you what you ought to think. We place the information out there, but it should not be pre-digested and pre-packaged in such a way that you become a reflector. Because if people can define you, they can confine you. You know, one thing about education is supposed to make you an intellectual. It's not enough to have intelligence. We can teach dogs and chimpanzees and circus animals how to do things. But the intellectual is one who thinks hypothetically. Where do I fit in this scheme of the now? To think hypothetically, to think about things that don't exist. Novelist, composers, architects, you name it. Think about things that don't exist, and they create them. Where there's no vision, the people perish. My mother put it another way. Where there's no vision, there's need for supervision. The thought process involves vision and vitality. Leaders think about things that don't exist. Leaders create that which has not existed. While managers manage. Managers maintain the status quo. They hold to that which has already been created by leaders. You are prospective leaders. You must marry vision and vitality. Oh, if you have vision and no vitality, you're not going anywhere. If you have vitality and no vision, you're not going anywhere. You must have the two. I have a cousin who was about 88 years old, and he married a young lady about 40 years of age. And I was sitting at the dining room table one day in Washington, D.C., and there he was, a distinguished ophthalmologist, and there she was, a public school teacher. And I teased her, named Mickey. I said, "Mickey, why'd you marry this old man?" She said, "I married him for his vision, and he married me for my vitality." Well, there are Tsunamis out there. There are Katrinas out there. Oh, we think of New Orleans, but there are a lot of little Katrinas in poverty. 15% population of this United States, over 32 million people, are in poverty. Now is the time for you to take a look at this. Who's going to make a difference if you don't, with your Christian ethic? It takes more than logic. It takes more than pathos. The Greeks would call it ethos. What do you do with what you have, the tools that you have, the Bible that you have trained down in your heart? Where do you go from here in meeting the needs of those who are in poverty, of meeting the needs of those who are homeless, of meeting the needs of those who are incarcerated? After all, the major text and sermon and advice that the Master gave us was, "And the last, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren." I know we are familiar with the canons of doctrines and teachings and philosophy and principles and practices of our church. Yes, they're absolutely vital. But by this shall all men know ye are my disciples. I was sitting in my office one day, and I was thinking about all the teachings I've had as a Seventh-day Adventist for the last 79 years. And I said, how do you distill that? And I thought of four M's and four verbs accompanying those four M's. There's a message which says, "Come unto me, all ye that labor." There's a mission that says, "Go ye out into all the world." There's a method that says, "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye love one another." There is the motto, "He that saith he abideth in him ought himself also so to walk even as he walked." It's a capsule. But it's a very important capsule for us to recognize that love is bigger than the canons, if we have the canons without love. My wife, when she was 14 years of age, was about to be confirmed. She was a student in the Catholic Church. Her mother passed when she was age 11. And there were six brothers and sisters. And they were without. And the grandmother took them in. And while they were there living from hand to mouth, for clothes, for food, and what have you, some white Seventh-day Adventists came by in Washington, D.C. The Crumbs, the Pauls, the Spruzels. And gave them food. And brought clothes and had them separated in terms of the sexes and by age. And convinced them to go and visit the Washington Sanitarium. My wife was the first one out of seven children who gave up the Catholic Church and became a Seventh-day Adventist. They will know we are Christians by our love. And I can tell you that when I walk into the Breath of Life Church in Washington, D.C., and see three pews, members of that family, a total of 53 now, because of the love that came about because of the ministry of those Seventh-day Adventist laymen. Well, you need to be a believer to make things happen too. Not only need to be a thinker, you need to be a believer. And the question, I think it's easy to ask and ought to ask, because sometimes if we aren't careful, we inherit our religion like we do the color of our eyes, our skin, and our hair. Do you really believe? Belief is a very important thing in the system of knowing where we get our energy. What is the magnet that we need to tell the world what is coming, how close the coming of Jesus is? We have to believe ourselves. It's not just about words. Paul says, I know in whom I believe. I am persuaded that he's able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. Early on, family worship in Topeka, Kansas. My parents indicated how important it was for me to believe in God and to believe in myself. Because I grew up in Kansas in a community of walls, school walls, public park walls, theater walls, restaurant walls, yes, hospital walls, cemetery walls, and even church walls. Everything was separated in terms of black and white. And if one didn't believe in himself, if one didn't believe in the Almighty that gave one the understanding that he made all nations, all races, and all creeds, then one would have been hopeless. But I thank God for that background and that understanding. It was a wonderful thing that I experienced at Union College in the same area. I went to Union College along with about 12 fellows, 12 black fellows in that particular school, in the days when we were separated in the dining room. And sometimes there were a few teachers who were not as sensitive and as caring as they might have been, because Christian education does demand that we care. It does demand that we have a sense of community. And yet there were other teachers who took us in over the weekend and encouraged us. I will never forget when I went to Loma Linda to give a commencement address some years ago, one of the teachers there said, "Whatever happened to those 12 rascals?" And I was happy to tell them that four are MDs, four have PhDs, one is a certified public accountant, one is a preacher, and one is a high school counselor. You have to learn to believe in the Almighty and to believe in yourself. Martin Luther King talked about the three dimensions of the complete life: the length of life, believing in yourself, the breath of life, believing in the dignity of others, and vertical experience, reaching out for God. God help us to learn to believe. The benefits of being a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church are multitudinous. And I'm happy to say that over the 79 years of my life, I can give God and this church so much credit. Let me tell you why I believe. This is a little autobiographical. 1981, a piece of pecan shell fell in my coleslaw, and I swallowed it without knowing it. I got a ruptured esophagus. I was in the hospital for 4 months, went from 220 pounds down to 159. They had given me up for dead except for prayer, I believe. 1986, When the rocket went up and exploded, I was on the table getting a six-way heart bypass. The doctor said, we've given three, we've given four, we've given five, but we've never given six. And when it was all over, I asked the question, how long is this going to last? How long do you expect me to live? He said, oh, about 7 years. That was 20 years ago, I believe. In 1999, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Thank God for Loma Linda. I went out there for 31 days and had treatments each day since then, each day after I arrived there. Had no ill effects or side effects since then, I believe. Yeah. January 8, 2002. I was sitting at my television set watching the Los Angeles Lakers and the Detroit Pistons. I knew I'd get an amen off of that. Well, applause. I received a call from a young lady who had just flown in from California. She was at the airport. She said, Dr. Hale, I just have to tell you right now, I saw our good friend, Dr. Washington, and he told me to tell you hello. Just as soon as she finished, I said, Rose, my head is spinning. The next time I came to, I was on the dining room floor. The paramedics were there. My son and daughter-in-law were there. It affected, didn't maim me, but it affected my balance. That's why I have a little help going up and down steps, especially when there's no banister. But there were three miracles there. The first miracle was when she called, had she called 30 seconds later, they would have found me on the floor the next morning. The second miracle was she had presence of mind to call my son who lives 2.5 blocks away. That was the second miracle. The third miracle was he was at home. I stand here today because she called, because he was there, and because they came. They didn't conquer. God Almighty conquered. To God be the glory. I will tell you why I believe. And you have a similar story. Not only must you think and believe, you must be a doer to make things happen. You have to be a doer to make things happen. I just spoke to you about that vitality. We live in an age where there's an issue between self-preservation and self-sacrifice. We are told that self-preservation is the first law of nature. The Darwinian philosophy calls for the survival of the fittest. But thank God, if you read the first chapter of Desire of Ages, we are taught that self-sacrifice is the first law of the Christian's nature. That's why I applaud Mahatma Gandhi. Gave up his law career, walked around in loincloths all over his country to give them independence. Martin Luther King, who put his life on the line not only to save black people but to save America. Mother Teresa, who when looking into the eyes of an HIV AIDS patient said, I see Jesus. That's not only belief, that's Christianity that cares. You have an opportunity to make a difference in those areas that I talked about. Who's going to do it? If you don't, we're in Iraq, and Lord knows when we'll ever get out. But you have something to do with making a determination how long we stay. Some people think politics is a bad word. They call it a plague. Well, you keep thinking that way and you will keep sitting where you sit and people will still be making decisions while you sit. We have an obligation, just as we do in Sabbath reform issues and temperance reform and what have you. We need to understand that we are our brother's keeper. It's so important to put your faith where your doctrine is.
And if you don't, it's like going to an alumnus and asking for $1 million for Andrews University. And that person says, yes, I support you 100%. But when the campaign comes around, you don't hear from him or her. Because commitment without cash is counterfeit. Did you get that? Commitment without cash is counterfeit. The same is true. The same is true in terms of what our obligations are. I want to close with just a little story that happened when I was 6 years old. My mother took ill with tuberculosis. She was in a sanitarium in Kansas City, Missouri, and they sent me to Youngstown, Ohio, to live with an aunt. I was there in the second and third grade, only a black kid in the class. Now, the kids didn't play with me, not because of color. They hadn't seen me at the church and the organization where their parents were.
Thank you. Thank you. You have to be a doer to make things happen.
So there I was in Youngstown, Ohio. Little black kid in the class, sitting out on playing on the playground over in the corner by myself. Thoroughly frustrated, primarily because of the fact that I wasn't home. I wasn't around my parents. Second and third grade received all E's, and E didn't mean excellent in those days. That was a grade between D and F. We'd call it a social pass. My mother recovered, and I went to Kansas City, Missouri, and they put me in Beacon Light Seventh-day Adventist School on the corner of 12th and Euclid. Lavada Lockhart knew how to love. Grades 1 to 8. About 40-some kids in the class. Next to the coal bin. Shades tattered and torn. Monkey belly stove right in the middle. Place that did not have all the things we say a person ought to have, a school ought to have in order to survive. But Lavada Lockhart used to pat me on the shoulder and say, Frank, you can do it. She'd go around to the other kids and do the same thing. When you got first place in the spelling contest, you got 3 Mr. Good Bars. If you got second place, you got 2. If you got first place, you got 1. And there were no losers. Everybody else got Peters and Red Hots. But let me tell you something. At the end of that 1 year, when I was in the 4th grade, my parents moved to Topeka, Kansas. My mother gave my grade card to Morgan Maxwell at Buchanan School, and he went through every directory he had. Couldn't find Beacon Light School there. Sorry, Mrs. Hill, he's going to have to repeat the 4th grade. He can't go into the 5th grade. My mother pled and pled, and he finally got the 5th grade teacher, said, are you willing to give him a chance? I went in the 5th grade. Stayed there for 2 weeks, and the teacher came back to the principal, said, he knows too much. Skip him. Stayed there for another few months. Teacher came back, says he knows too much. Skip him. Skipped for 4 times before receiving a 4-year scholarship to Howard University at age 16. Destined to be a dropout, except there was a teacher who knew that teaching is a touch of immortality. Each of you have a touch. Regardless of your field of emphasis or concentration, you have a touch of immortality. Anytime you take a child's pencil and hand that child's hand and hold that pencil over and over again to make an alphabet, A, 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 until which time you can withdraw and that child can make that alphabet, you live on in that child. And so, the message is, now is the time. Now is the time because it's high time. It's past time. It's beyond time. What are you going to do with your time? Well, Gibran says, there are those who give little of the much which they have, and they give it for recognition, and their hidden desires makes their gifts unwholesome. There are those who have little and give it all. These are the believers in life, and in the bounties of life, their coffers are never empty. There are those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward. There are those who give in pain, and that pain is their baptism. There are those who give and know not pain in giving, nor do they seek joy, nor are they mindful of this virtue.
they give as the myrtle gives in yonder valley, who breathes her fragrance into space. Through the hands of such as these, God speaks, and from behind their eyes, he smiles upon the earth. It is good to give when asked. It is better to give unasked through understanding. That's your challenge. Some of us who've been on the battlefield for a long time make no pretense about trying to do it by ourselves. My mother grew up in Virginia. My grandfather had a farm, had the mule wagon where he'd head to the barn two or three times a day, carrying his vegetables and carrying his fruit. One day, my cousin, City Slicker, from New York, came. And my grandfather, after the wagon was loaded, said, "Giddy up, John, giddy up, Harvey, giddy up, Henry, giddy up, Smith, giddy up, Cedric." And the old mule started toward the barn. And my cousin said, "Grandpa, if you knew his name was Cedric, why didn't you say that in the first place?" My granddad said, "If that old mule had ever thought he's pulling that cart all by himself..." We need your help. God bless.